So, besides Elena, we have met before, but maybe. So, what this is, just to explain it to Remy and then to the others again. So, we're at APAS, Advanced Performance and Scenography Studies, which is
what APAS stands for.
A lot to work on. So it's a program where participants join, but it's also a place where thinking happens on thinking and working happens on what is artistic research. And for this, there is a kind of parallel activity called the Research Center, which is. Not, but this could be the research center, or that table could be the research center.
Okay.
Sometimes maybe as the research center. Okay. And that's where I'm stationed these months, just until April, to try to think with APAS about. What this research center is, but more specifically, what artistic research and technological practice could somehow mean to each other. And clearly, I'm doing that from my experience with Constant and also my long experience with APAS, and wanted to somehow have ways to share that. So this is why we started Monday Readings as a kind of mix between a space for reflection on what that is, this technological practice within the thinking of artistic research, but also a way to invite each other to learn together. And it's a reading of concrete technologies that are somehow relevant to an institution like APAS in this case. It is all about what's running here and what's the APAS, the institution is touching, but of course it would be the same for other places. But mixed with a theoretical reading, which we think is important to read on those two levels, and we try to spend the day together to go from the one to the other. So we've done one session already. So Martin and me prepared a session on text processing because we were interested in Yoko joined and Pierre also. We were interested in what happens when you type an email, what is actually going on when you touch the keyboard, all the processes and layers, and so this is how this came about by exploring files and how they're built and how they're working. We start to see different layers and worlds opening. So it was an interesting experience. And we ended that with an encounter with Teletype, a little machine. That can convert a keyboard to. Yeah, so this is where this came in. So this under the.
Yay!
What does the machine do?
Yeah, so maybe you
basically.
Keep falling off. That's not what the machine does.
Okay, totally nostalgic.
It was one of the first interfaces that we used to basically write text to a computer. And it had this characteristic that it would punch out kind of rich letter the bits that it's made of on paper. So that's basically the file of what would be typed in. But okay. It looks like a typewriter machine, but it would also somehow evolve always this translation. So And it's nice because you can still read somehow.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah, you can still read the bits. So it's this in between.
Nice.
Machine, but
no. But the machine can then also read this file.
But which still
yeah, you can
that's
read that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Then it types
yeah,
back.
You can play back, and the fact that it's still now some of the letters are still saved with the same pattern shows also the continuity of I mean, this machine is like 50 years old now, mm-hmm. but still there is a lot of parts which are kept in the technological ensemble.
Yes.
You
know, so.
Mm-hmm, that's also like the materiality of information, right? Like the material construction of how you represent information starts like propagating through different generations, even though you move from analog to digital. Mm-hmm. You still have like this history coming along with it.
Yes. When you type, it's still there. So we prepare the sessions with different people. So Martino is joining the preparations for the first three. So the next one on compression, so on how to have the material of files beyond the characters. Then there's a session we prepare with Seda on key cards. So what do you want to say?
It's basically about how information technologies are moving outside of the desktops into the mobiles, into the pockets, but now also into infrastructure. Yes, there we go, the key cards, and it's basically trying to think together about what that means. Because, like, what is it a kind of symbol of in the future? What is it as a transition? How does it reconfigure trust, but also, like, autonomy and kind of sovereignty over your institutions? You know, like, so it opens up a lot of questions, but maybe there are also questions that I don't think about because I come at it from a very specific perspective, so it's like,
just one about what is a key card, in the sense that I know that it's a key card. you now also can open your car with your phone.
Yeah.
Is it also a key card?
Sure, why not? Okay. I think that, I mean, that's exactly the point, is that you're okay. I mean, what does that mean, right? Like to move from like physical keys, which are basically on some level secured through their physical materiality, to things that are secured through other kind of conceptions, which you know are. Yeah, and it also, it brings absolutely, something to think about, it often brings in things like encryption into the question, because you don't want anyone with a car to be able to open your car or whatever, and encryption, of course, itself is like a mega infrastructure, right? Like, because it requires like a couple hundred years of maths, and then a couple, you know, nation states who have enough institutions to like put a bunch of mathematicians in a room and then like make encryption and then break it, and then all of that somehow plays into your little interaction with the door or the car and things like that. So it's exactly like opening it up and not seeing it just as a key, but as a kind of infrastructure.
A matter for control, for surveillance and control, very much like at stake.
Right, because like if you use the keys, you know, you can imagine that the traces you leave behind when you use physical keys is very limited, right? Mm-hmm. That's always, if you use keys, then all of a sudden entrances and departures and the frequency
and
of
your face. And
So it's really expanded in a way. So I'm glad that the topic is very fruitful.
It's so cool to open everything with my face here.
It's not even just cool, it's so convenient.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. I don't have to bring anything else. I have my face with me all the time.
Right, so you don't forget it at home, you know. Exactly. So I don't know where all we will go with it, but I think it's a productive, easy to handle topic because it just pulls everything with it.
And it's sure to read, because it's Monday reading.
Exactly. There's a lot of reading.
And you can see that when we start opening up one thing, you always have this kind of, each thing contains another black box element. And like, as we saw, we started with text, and we were already talking about the internet standard. it's always pulls all the network with it.
So the last session we'll prepare with Sina, Sina Sakti. He was here as a participant now already quite some month ago, and he's interested from thinking memory devices going to look at us at databases. Mm-hmm. So it will all connect at some point. So that's the last session we'll do. Today it's called Local Server because we wanted to somehow look together at where files are when we store them somewhere, online, on a Google Drive, on the server here upstairs, on APA's server, and to try to understand what that means, where, what the consequences are, how this has different, also different political consequences, different relations to the hosting and serving of these files. So that's what we're going to do today. But maybe we can make a quick round just for any sake, so you know who's around the table.
I'll put my glasses on. That makes me more sharp.
Yes.
Even more sharp. Yes, exactly. So I'm a researcher at the University of London. I'm now based in the electrical engineering department. I'm a computer scientist, but I do very interdisciplinary work, and they somehow tolerate me there, which is very nice. And we've been working together for on and off for 10 years, and I've been kind of in touch with Constance for the last 18, and we've organized different events together over the last year and a half around software and technology and critical engagement.
Nice to meet you. I introduced myself 2 weeks ago.
I would love to have a time machine.
My name is Pierre. I'm working here in EPAS with different functions, because in EPAS we do different things, and we are not always doing the same thing. So I'm creating workshops or blog for the postmaster program, and also taking care of, sometimes of the research center, and I'm an artist. I consider that what I do in general is artistic, let's say, even if I don't produce work of art. Can I say more? I don't know. You can visit the website, see what I have been doing. And, my general interest to come here is that I'm interested into reading things for a long time, and I appreciate a lot to be here to, let's say, to practice reading, especially with objects that are very alien to me or that alienate me. You see, so I'm happy to be with people who are practicing reading objects that maybe difficult to read, so I need help. So.
I'm Yoga. I work here. I do production coordination. It's 3 days a week.
And do you have a time when you're an artist as well?
Honestly, I don't. I've never called myself an artist, but this is a. I'm a filmmaker, yes, originally. But I never called myself an artist.
Difficult so terrain.
No, it's another discussion. So yes, I do things outside of APAS. And I'm also a mother, I have two children, and
Many times.
Yeah. Which is nice. Mm-hmm. Sometimes hard to combine, but
my name is Lilia. I am an artist. I think I'm an artist for political reasons, more than from skill. So I found myself all the time in environments where things have to be self-organized, based on collaborations. I mean, I have to invent my own setups, you know, mm-hmm. or I found myself following mm-hmm. these kind of things. So I'm here for that same reason. Like, what is an Institute for Artistic Research? Mm-hmm. How is that constituted? How do we do it? And mm-hmm. how do we get away from a certain label in them, let's say, of functions and roles, and also to put things at stake constantly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the coordinator now as well, since 1 year, mm-hmm. and I'm also co-curator of some functions. We are core people, we are four people, mm-hmm. and we work together on what is the direction orientation of APAS. Mm-hmm. And then, so
that's
I'm
kind of the goal of the. Mm-hmm.
Yes, so it's okay. It's serious. Mm-hmm. Okay. Me and two other people, Vladimir mm-hmm. Miller and Nicola Gagliardi. Mm-hmm. And so this is functioning now for 1 year in this way. So we are still also trying to see how it works. Yeah. Okay.
That's
yes.
Okay. Thank
you.
So I'm Reni. I sneaked myself in this morning because I read your description, what was going to happen. And I'm an artist, I'm an organizer, I'm an activist. I live in Graz, I'm not originally born there, but I'm Austrian. So I went there in 1989, and the good thing for me was that, you know, I came from a smaller city, and everybody there thought, like, okay, you're studying, you're doing this and that, and additionally you're a musician, I mean, you're an artist, but it's more like hobby scale, mm-hmm. because the city is so small. And when I came to Graz, I could decide, mm-hmm. I'm only going to put on the table what I want to put there, and in the center what I want to put there, and I could put my personal artistic practice there. And at that time, it was just a period when in Austria some technologies became available to more people. So we had the first thing was that we were radio pirates, and we were really pirating mm-hmm. The frequency spectrum, because Austria until then... So the frequency spectrum until then was totally controlled by state only. There was also no commercial radio or TV. Mm-hmm. And then I think it was like the third wave of trying to get like pirate radio and trying to get different types of technology. So that's, and that became part of it immediately. And I'm a musician and composer and experimental sound person, DIY mostly. And so for me, radio was totally logic to be mm-hmm. interested in, and also try to like technically understand how it works, but also from its content and the way how we use the time that we have to find different ways how to do that in a really non-commercial way, in the sense of really trying to find out things and not being driven by any interested economical way driven. And then in the mid of the 1990s, there was a big change, or it started already in the beginning of the 1990s, the politics and policy of the universities was changing. So they used to be really open to give their infrastructure also to people who were neither working there nor studying. But mm-hmm. if it was, let's say, some artistic or even cultural, in a very broad sense, endeavor that people wanted to follow, mm-hmm. there was an openness to say, okay, I mean, they did not announce it on their then websites, which they might have had already. Mm-hmm. But they were really open. And then they started changing. They started becoming more and more capitalistic, in the sense of you either had to be working there or be a student, so you had to be a product of the whole thing, or you had to bring in some external money. And they started shifting the politics. And this is why we actually started our own network of servers, which is called Mu'ati, which is the name of the river in our city. And what we said is that we want to have access to the internet in a non-commercial and autonomous way for artistic and cultural people and organizations and stuff. Mm. And at that time, it was really revolutionary in the sense of many people, I remember the first meeting said, what do I need that for? Why would I need an email address? You know, and this is not such a, and I'm telling this, I like to tell this because it's not really long time ago. And then there was not even an understanding that that could be an interesting or even important infrastructure. And then that shifted to, yeah, okay, let's try it. And we started really setting up our own lines, and we had a physical network where we rent the lines from the telecom, but apart from that, everything actually really belongs to either this institution or the institutions that are connected. And we always said, okay, this is, we're going to take care, let's say, this is the main modem, and this is our line, and this is our modem. So we're going to take care until the modem works, and everything else is up to you. So if you connect one machine, fine. If you connect 100, you'll have to deal with the fact that there's just a certain amount of bandwidth, but apart from that, it's totally yours, as long as it keeps non-commercial and in a way in the spirit of sharing. And so we always worked with free software, which was also at that time, people would be like, Okay. So really, and I'm not a technical person, you know, I'm not the coder or anything. I'm just really, I'm a very enthusiastic dilettante in a lot of things. So I was always interested in how these things work, but not so much in really then taking care of it. So this part of maintenance and stuff is really not my strength. My strength is to communicate about it and again open spaces, but then there needs to be different people who have more calmness in really
patience. Perseverance.
Yeah,
all
exactly.
These
yeah, yeah. No, all of these, you know, like really trying to want to find out why this detail isn't working. Sorry, that's not me. So, and it's also good, you know, like to know your strengths and possibilities, and also see there are certain things that are really necessary and important to have, but it probably or certainly not me, or maybe it can even really not be one person, because it's really necessary to share that, because maybe there's nobody who actually really likes cleaning the floor, so we'll just have to take turns and to find out how to do that. So I'm also really interested in always seeing how are the social and the personal and emotional networks that actually make something sustainable in a way that you can say it can change, it can move somewhere else, it can be something else, it can become something else, because, you know, if we started 25 years ago, and there has so much has been happening on the technical level, on the political level, on the social level, on the level of understanding what technology means, in the sense that it has become like part of our pocket, you know, and it used to be like these huge monsters of machines. And a lot of things that go with that, yeah, and to really see what can be, let's say, a critical, a point of view from a critical thinking perspective, what could be a feminist perspective into that, what could be an artistic perspective in the sense of what do we do there, yeah, and how far can we go in this defining and understanding how it works and which role do we want to play, and sometimes it's maybe not participating. So it's also the questions, what do I do and what do I not do? And to find out what that is, and that again and again reflecting upon that, what it means at each time, and maybe also in a region. So Brussels might be confronted with different questions like that. And definitely, let's say that one of our neighboring countries, Hungary, is really confronted with a different political setting at the moment. So it's not only technical, it really needs to be understood that this is not neutral. Yeah? There's nothing neutral in technology, and to understand that and to see where do we have chances to actually at least, let's say, express what we think and want, maybe even if we can't change the way how the rules are at the moment. So I think these are really interesting aspects, and they are interesting for me from so many levels and layers, and there's a lot of, I would say, even freedom of thinking about what it could be, even if we can't put that in a, let's say, physical reality. But, I mean, this is really, these are like different things. Mm-hmm. And these are all the things that I'm interested in. We know each other since, 10 years, 15 years.
Yeah.
We have been working together on different things. And I'm actually in town because there's a preparational meeting for the next Eclectic Tech Carnival, which is a feminist get-together thinking and dealing about free software, open hardware, doing workshops and kind of stuff. And we just happened to coincide with the meetings, and then I read about your morning meeting, and I was like, it's my first time. If I may, I join. Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, for me, too, somehow the interest in technology is coming from a political perspective and seeing basically how you have currently a shift of the question of government from like a state issue to a more general issue that gets often embodied in objects or infrastructure. Like, for example, kind of technologies of this
Hi.
And so yeah, even though I've been trained in I studied graphic design, I kind of never really was interested in arts for art's sake or for design's sake. And I was part of a collective in Amsterdam with which we started a hack lab, which was really a way to open up basically and start reading the tools and the kind of layers of control and basically the social aspect of technology, which is always embedded with it. And so from there, basically, still unsatisfied both with kind of the more activist approaches to using technology and the theoretical readings of technology, in a way, still now I find in arts there is a space for having discussions that do not happen in these two spaces. So, yeah, when I moved to Brussels, I encountered Constant and a really nice network with which to do this. And, yeah, and basically this is another attempt exactly at, yeah, reading tools, reading text, because it's somehow not enough to read one separated from the other. And, yeah.
So here we are.
Thank you.
And Sven, just one. So we were starting late and then making a round of who's here and some why we're here.
I just finished, it was. I can't get enough of more reading tools. Well, I was mainly interested in the first part.
Okay.
Yeah, it's ongoing, interested in cyber feminism, cyber reading. But you never really come so much during the program or something. You're really busy, maybe with your block a bit.
Yeah.
That was a new good thing.
Well, we did situated knowledge together. So.
Yeah,
we're going to step up. So for us, so this session is trying to understand servers. And we started from the idea like to try to somehow experience together that servers are computers. And computers are servers. It just depends on where they are placed in the network, how they start to, like how they can be addressed, and then how they start to behave.
Yeah, somehow it's impossible to understand the server as a machine when it's not related with the network, because again it's all kind of the infrastructure and the software part and the hardware part and the also the economy that produces are always somehow interconnected. So a server only makes sense if it's on some type of network. So since now we have a kind of hegemonic network, which we call the internet, we kind of need to look into it to also understand what a server is and how it works. Because it's always, so we will talk a lot about the network, inevitably, but yeah, to try, because it's the only way for us to still understand how, like what are the conditions of the type of assumptions and systems that come with talking about servers. And yeah, actually, the it's interesting that server is kind of second phase. Like talking about computers on the network are servers is kind of a second phase of how the internet is assumed. Which I mean, now it's even it continuously gets more abstract and continuously have more layers of packaging. But initially, you would only talk about hosts. Because the initial understanding of the internet, which comes from, anyway, really American post-war semi-apocalyptic scenarios in which it's thinking of how to pass from a centralized network to a more distributed type of network, even though, obviously, in the current state of things, it's clear that centralization comes back because of other capitalistic elements which are connected. In it, still, like the initial assumptions, which are still to some extent regulating how the communication works, is that you would have different hosts on the network that would be able then to host content which could be accessed from the other parts of the network. Later, you like we shifted to a phase in which you have some machines which are specifically taught to host this content, which are the servers, and we have instead nodes in a network which acts as clients, so you start having this polarization. And still, the best way maybe to understand is to start being all hosts in a way, so we do really something practical to try and see a bit of the switch.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I think maybe we should just do... it's going to be, yeah, the interesting thing is to try to do these commands together, but also opening up when there is things that are not clear, because it's got, I mean, for us, for some of us at the table, it's something we're already a bit familiar with, but there is always elements which are less clear and more to be asked about.
So in principle, everyone can follow this, no?
Yeah, if everybody has a computer, it's...
if you have a computer? And so the first is, but you need to open a command line, no?
Yeah, that should be...
Okay. Well, that's...
it's
so you have a computer? Yeah, okay. So there's so Max.
That's
yeah, that's very good. So I don't know if you ever did that to open a what's it called on the Mac? Command?
The terminal?
Terminal.
So the terminal is basically
minus one to do my head.
So you know computers have this layer of graphics which is still running on top of a more fundamental layer which is more based. The text space, as we saw last.
Yes, you show.
And then we can access the programs. So then we just push the email. You can open it. Which goes
so it's an interface, it's just it's a text based interface to your machine. So they give you other.
God, it's so hard to explain basics, no?
Yeah,
it's really painful, yeah.
Yeah, but in a way that's the way computing works. It's all this kind of layers of interface in which you don't need to care what happens underneath. But when you start to open things up, then you also understand why the effects make you a bit paralyzed. And,
And then the password is la 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 la, four times la.
And all the small? That's very nice. La 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 la. And do you have different, like how you could do a singing thing, you know? Like, you sing to the computer, and if you read the right tone, it's going to open.
That's great. Yeah.
Like a key, and a different key.
Right.
A different key. Oh, that's very small.
Yeah, it's cute.
No, that would be nice. My screen is
the overhead projector a little back, so that...
So yeah, we are all on a terminal of some type. So basically, when we join now the wireless network, there is a lot of things that happen kind of automatically to put us on the network. which before it were things you would need to set up somehow, how you would participate in the network, but it's now dealt with by the router, which is basically right now the interface which have us all be part of this internal network, and it also connects us to the internet. Because the name internet means inter-network, because it's a network of networks. So basically, it's really designed to have this, again, initially, the idea is that was that you would see each other point of the network, but obviously this later changed in more having kind of different walled gardens, or you can say. So the router, in a way, creates an internal network and also puts us on the external network.
So it's like the boundary between us here within the reach of the router and our way to pass to the outside world.
And so we all pass through the router, which kind of symbolizes us on the network. So the router also gives us all a number, which is called IP number. IP stands for Internet Protocol, so it's really like from, I think, 1973 was when they proposed this this protocol, which is, again, it's an, in the 70s and 80s, you had a lot of different networks, a lot of different protocols, some, in general, European or American, and we can say that TCP/IP is the American proposal which kind of won, in a way, on hegemony. But okay, it's really the history of networks would be a really radical moment. But IP is also the name of this address we all get, and we get from the router we get an internal IP, which is this number which kind of identifies the device with which we are on the network, and in the same way the router has an IP on the internet. But so we both have a private IP and a public IP. So the private IP is basically how all the machines can see each other in the room.
So it's the kind of network name of each of these machines. So each of your machines will have its own private IP. And then there's the IP of this.
Okay.
It's how we as a block are seeing to the outside.
And how do we become a block? By using the same
network. So if you connect to upper floor,
then we are.
But upper floor has a different
number.
Because it's a different route. Mm-hmm. The router is policing the...
Yes.
Yeah, actually even we have two routers which then become, through the connection to the phone network, basically again another
one
on the outside.
So here, like where it goes out to the...
Yeah, it's always this packaging. And I think in all our computers, the command that shows basically the settings of the network, and I think probably it's without needing to say it. But it's ifconfig. If you try and type it, you should get back a series of...
numbers.
Just
of information about how your network is set up, basically.
Oh, but maybe
you
get your...
Yeah.
Just type ifconfig.
Ifconfig?
Yeah.
Only in one word.
Mm-hmm.
Does it give back something?
And then?
And to return.
Okay.
I have a nice cut of the
So ifconfig.
I never...
No,
I
used it only when I had to do it to steal very expensive programs. So to only for illegal things.
Yeah.
Because I needed them in the crack, but
But what is the thing that you're saying?
So, yeah, it says a lot of things.
Not communicate with
it's talking to me.
The setting. So I use something for that. The setting of the model.
You feel like you're doing something very
and so, for example, how, yeah, the fact that you go to a router, what
that's
is
good.
Your IP, what type of settings, like how big are the packets, and what type of relation in between the computers.
It's identifying how many, basically. So maybe we can see, like, Lydia's IP.
may I
Can you can you read it? Can you see?
She's a long list of things.
Yes.
Can you maybe say it?
It's a lot.
It's a lot going on the Mac.
Because it's a lot of interfaces.
Yeah.
Because I have to keep this actually the information of all the network interfaces, which are a lot, because you have, I mean, the Ethernet, the kind of cable port, the wireless port, some, internal, I mean, it gets really complex. We can also do some tunnel, some VPN, kind of, like sometimes it uses a virtual interface to connect. But what we wanted to look at...
Which line?
Wow.
I would pick the V line, right?
So I think it's EN0 in this computer, and I see it because I recognize the IP.
It's
an
IP
which is similar to mine.
So
EN0?
192.
So this is clear, huh?
You want the whole number?
Yeah.
192, 168, 254, 205.
In this computer, for example, it's different because it's EN1.
Can you read Yogus? Yogus?
Yeah, it's 192, 168, 254, 204.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have 214.
Yeah, the broadcast, IP symbolizes a bit like.
2-1?
The whole
214 is the
whole network, the whole internal network. Mm-hmm. So it's in general two sets.
255.
It means basically everybody.
So 192.168. 254.255.
And then 209.
And one.
And so basically, it's this.
You feel it?
Sorry.
Exploding.
209. So as you see, only the last part changes.
And there's a dad.
Because
there's
a bigger subnets, like subnetworks, which they kind of like. It basically scales. How it was thought is that it would be scale up, so like in a room you would only change the last number, and for a bigger network we would start changing also the previous scaling up. But I mean, now it works really different because of the general complexity of the network, but still when we are in an internal network it's usually just a subnetwork with the last row of numbers which changes, and there from 1 to 255, and the number is because it's again it's like based on binary, so you would have 256 total possible numbers, which is again because it's 2 but 2 times 2 at the elevated at the power, so it makes sense for how it's how it works for the machine, and for us it's a bit weird as a range of numbers. Mm-hmm. Or people that do not work with binary, but again, it's all the standards which keep, like, it's they've been chosen in the 70s, but they're still here as a legacy, even though they're not, like, there has been attempts to actually change to another, this is called IP version 4, and there's been attempts for the last 20 years to change to a newer version which would allow another way for the network to work, I mean, more efficient, and since there are more and more devices, and also, but the point is that the legacy stays because there are so many machines that still use this, and there is no yet kind of an economical gain to kind of switch to another version. So it shows also how the legacy can be paralyzing, or you need to kind of have workarounds to keep it.
So you maybe do a ping just to.
Yeah.
I was not, maybe I didn't give enough attention. I have two numbers. So I give you one, maybe it's the other that you wanted. It is the INET or the broadcast number?
The broadcast, it's more kind of it's a symbolic IP, which basically means that when you, because with this IP you can send and receive things from IPs. And when you send to broadcast, it means you send to everybody. You send to all the people in this subnetwork. So yeah, we will see it actually now, because the basic command of the first command that you do to try to test if a machine is there, it's called ping. It's really nice. It's super simple. It's basically you send it sends a package to an IP. And it receives back a ping if the machine is
wrong. No?
And the command is really ping, and then
so who will ping?
Yeah, ping. So for example, Yoko would ping.
And then you can choose one of the IP numbers. You can choose mine, for example. Mine is here. So it always there's this convention to say. All the numbers, the IP numbers that start with 192.168, they are by definition local. So they are not. That's a convention, that there's no mathematical reason behind it. It's just that a certain moment. When people started realizing, when they started
to
hear broadcast, they had to
find. Oh, yeah,
this is communication.
Yeah, this is basically sending you and seeing if you send back, if you are there.
Okay, so what can I do then?
Well, you can ping any other of
kind of network would not be open.
So you're not like you don't know what's happening. But Martino is has been sending you test packages to see
needs to be
if he gets anything.
Yeah.
Because instead, if I do some IP which is used by nobody, it just says that the destination is
actually. Can we just have a look? He's now. Pinging some fantasy number, and it's just
no, the 200, for example, nobody's using, so it says that there is no host again.
Okay. But if it pings Yoko, then
it receives back information about how long it took. So that's why it's still very used in network work.
You break
because
down
how fast
the
network is.
Yeah. So 64 bytes, I guess, is the standard size for the packet.
I know, but you guys want to hear like what's coming back, basically, when you write ping.
Yeah.
Ping.
So it's this series of bytes that get sent every second by default to this IP, and so the ICMP sec is like basically in this list what ping it was, because sometimes if the network is in a messed up state, you receive back in different order, or some you don't receive.
So you send 1, 2, 3, 4, but you get back 1, 4, 7. So you need to know which one you're measuring.
TTL, I don't have a clue. We could look it up. I think it's time to leave. Or no?
It's also 64, so it is a bit of a.
Ah, maybe it's the.
Total?
No, sometimes it's 255, so
okay.
I'm not sure.
And
time to live, or hop limit, is a mechanism that limits the lifespan or lifetime of data in a computer or network. TTL may be implemented as a counter or timestamp attached to or embedded in the data.
So basically, did it say the number of hops?
Yeah.
So because basically now when I do the ping, it actually first sends something to the router, and the router sends something to you. So that's one hop. But if you would be pinging some really far network, go first to the router, then to the phone line, then to the. So it would, in somehow you want to limit the amount of like the path that it can go towards, because otherwise it would sometimes run infinitely and kind of clog up the network. So after 64 hops, the machines in the network, they do not send it again. Because in general, the rationale of the internet is also that each device should try to forward to the right IP. So all the machines have kind of internal settings of how to route, how to redirect information. So when I send it to the router knows that it has to send it in the room and not to basically the phone.
The explanation is great. The purpose of the TTL field is to avoid a situation in which an undeliverable datagram keeps circulating on an internet system, and such a system eventually becoming swamped by such immortals.
Wow, that's quite
super.
Such immortals.
Can you paste it in the light?
Yeah, sure, it's really great. Yeah.
So. And I just did a trace route from here to Moatia, which is a server that we found, like a server system, and it's 16 hops. So that's what you were trying to do. So it means that 16 machines in between here and Moate in Graz need to know where they're, that this is what I want to know. And then it also shows me how long it takes.
And this is always done via the IP, basically.
Yeah.
Because the router knows some.
Like, are you trace routing how many hops it takes to come to yoga?
The second command, which is really still very
is it is clear? So to send packages to test out whether a computer is
one question. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I tried to send it. Oh, I did send it to Lilias,
mm-hmm.
And regularly I read request timeout for ICMP sec.
All of them?
And
clean space and the number.
So I basically came.
Are you kidding me? What's going on? It's not a number.
209.
Yes, that's very, very quiet timeout. It continues.
Yeah, that's for example why this comment is used, because you can see that there is something in the network which is not completely.
Yeah, not there. So that's
people that work with networks would use this tool to exactly see if this happens and try to track why it happens. So, and you can see the
192.168.254.209.
But if you go, for example, we are seven computers plus more on the
router.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think wireless is not
at 50,
most,
at 54.
It's really balanced in a way.
But I remember one part of this thing,
but I'm pretty sure I can get to you.
A blessing girl.
Yeah, but I don't know why.
And it's just like a defined amount.
You were too old.
And then he can check this all the data come back.
Me?
So
no,
information there, then it also came back.
Also request timeout.
If you actually, let's say you're sending a bigger file, and
Macs can't ping each other? Is there maybe a firewall that's disabling this?
Because you can ping.
Can you ping me?
30 hops.
What is your IP?
I'm 209, and what are you? 20?
182.
I can ping you. Can you ping me?
No.
It's weird. So it might be because I have a firewall, but I can't.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and also because.
Do you have a firewall as well?
No, maybe. I don't know.
It could be that since Macs really like to kind of put settings without, like. That blocks to do fundamental things with the machine. It can be that sometimes a machine can be set to not answer to pings.
Turn it off and then see what happens.
Or to answer only to. Certain.
Yeah, but because the ping is a specific type of. Okay.
Where can I see if there is something?
And then
a network or something.
So I turned my firewall off. So let's see.
Yeah.
It works now.
Yeah.
Okay. So the firewall. Okay. So the firewall. If you never knew it, I'll show you. So if you have system preferences, and then you go to security and privacy.
Security, yeah.
And then within the four up here, depending on your version of macOS, there's firewall.
And then, I mean, I have a lock on it, but if I turn it on, then people can't just ping me. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a way to
not be visible in the
right.
network.
Which also explains because I pinged the broadcast number, mm-hmm. and it basically pings all the computers on the network, so it was not showing a bunch. It's also on, yeah. So if you would turn it on, we could ping you. But when I did the broadcast, it pinged all the computers that are...
Basically, when you ping to this number that we also like as a broadcast number, with the setting minus B, which is broadcast, it kind of sends the pings to everybody. As you can see, everybody is answering. So we have the 204, 209, 205, 215. So...
Wait, you could see everyone? Because I couldn't see everyone. That was the thing. Can you show? I do see myself,
so,
okay.
So
some computers, probably a computer in the room, or that iMac, so it's also, you see that
there are copier
phones.
Because you can turn off your firewall now?
Yes.
Okay, because I can now see you. Okay. And earlier when I did a broadcast, I couldn't see him and I couldn't see myself.
Right, so if you ping the broadcast number, you get
a list of all the machines that
now
it's okay.
Why would you ping?
Do you see me?
Like, it's a way to test the network,
yes,
so it's
long time
you,
ago
you see you try you try to see if
the
there is
of
you can see
one.
Another
yes,
machine
yes,
or not.
Yes,
it's really useful when the network doesn't work, but also understanding the speed of the
firewall.
Who's connected? If there's any computers that you would not
and
want
so
to be connected, or
mm-hmm.
if
you want to kick out.
So
basically, milliseconds.
So basically, I should also block. Certain.
Yes, like you can choose not to answer. You would still receive, but you could choose not to respond for the thing, which was happening with the
service machine. Mm. The cloaking.
And now it seems like something really specific, but actually a lot of software we use these type of methods to exactly know if you're connected or know if they connect to the server and so on. So...
So like the whole peer-to-peer... Everything also works with this.
Yeah, well, it gets really complex, but in a way, you can check if there is a host. And so, yeah, this 192.168 is, as you were explaining, it's kind of designed to be local IPs.
Mm-hmm.
So, all the IPs that start with that and also with 10 dot...
There's another one which starts with 27 dot whatever. This is not a mathematical thing, it's just a definition. That will be local because the fear was that there was not going to be enough IP numbers in general available for all the machines around. So that was why this convention actually happened,
which
one part.
Was exactly what happened.
Yeah, exactly. And now there's this IP version 4, what you said, and then the more current one is the IP version 6, which gives more numbers. And the thing is, one of the backgrounds to that is the so-called Internet of Things, where each,
if we really want to give a unique
number, we need much more numbers than we have with this system. And this is why they want to change. Okay. So that really each thing can get their own number.
Which started becoming also an economy of its own, because in the beginning some companies were assigned really a lot of IPs because they... And they are now selling them because they're really valuable, because it's a way to appear on the internet without having to pass through another indication. It's really super strange.
Yeah.
And the same command can be used to ping also a machine outside of this network. So...
So
it automatically looks up... That's the thing. So every name, like every website or server online that you access, we usually access it with a name, like for example, apas.be.
Mm-hmm.
But it always has to go down to an ID, because that's the basic way you appear on the network. So this name, it's called a domain name, and works with the DNS, which is the domain name system. And that's the way, because basically IPs are impossible to remember. I think a lot of people do remember them, but when you need to. And so this layer was added, which would allow to have readable names. And in the beginning, it was actually also, in a way, negotiated. So you would have a file which would contain all the names to what IPs they meant. And you could add yourself. So I want to mix name, and this is my IP. So it was really, in a way, a negotiation on a file. And later, when more and more names were added, I mean, it was clear it was not would not scale up. A name server system was developed, which is basically a whole other layer of authorities and standards that regulate how you can buy a name and connect it back to an ID, basically. You see, it's very.
Which brought to us? I can. I'm just
kidding. So what happens? Negotiated by the router. Maximo can send a signal to the computer that holds Yahoo's website that has an IP number like ours. It's just that it has also a fancy name that is registered to connect to this IP address. So you can do exactly the same to that computer that is somewhere, will look like this or something. It's just many.
So this many ones.
Many ones. So somewhere on one of these machines. Is the IP address of APAS registered to APAS.pe? And so he's seeing if this computer, that is, we will find out where it is, where it's located, whether it's on, whether it's working. So it is. So it's just kind of sending the packet to test if it will give it back and then with what speed.
Is then this the actual hosting?
Oh, this
you
is
mean
the
this photo?
Yeah.
This is not the actual. I can find that. But it will
It symbolizes it a actual data center.
The hop still? Like you want to do
the
trace route?
Or the name? Or like the because still there is a trace of this host name system of before. Which is basically when you have a file both in Linux and Mac, which is called the host file, which is where you would originally have basically where you have an IP and how you want to call it. So for example, still so basically still now, if I would say that for example. Pierre computer is
254-208.
And I say it's Pierre. I would be able to do ping Pierre.
Okay.
And it gets translated to IP and so on.
So you make your own mapping between IP and name. Mm-hmm. And
because that's easier to remember.
Yeah,
of course.
It's more human readable.
And so this file.
All this has been programmed.
You mean now? Like, it's this.
I mean, all this is very human. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of human way of thinking.
Yeah.
To translate it to a language.
That's why I asked, has it all been programmed, or is this like an outcome?
It's always layers. So in the beginning, you have IPs, and then it's clear this is not going to work, so we need to add the name. So we have this host file. And
so it's a human brain.
And this host file would be shared, so we would all use the same IP in, let's say.
But wait, what do you mean with human brain?
I mean, when I look at this in the logic and the language that you use, I mean, it's not something that is like out of space and that you're discovering. It's actually something with the logic that I have.
It's like you said, that was like a competition, what kind of protocol was most efficient or whatever, and then IP, American one, won. So, yeah.
Well, and the name is something that comes to where that is translatable, and then obviously it becomes something more because it becomes a value. Like these domain names now, they're really like they can be thousands and thousands of euros because they are easy to remember. So
yeah, I still want to understand what you mean by.
But do you mean by
or what you do not do,
like something is doing it so we are discovering it back, or I mean. It's made by humans.
Well, it's made by humans, so it has a it's not chemistry in the sense that you bring things together and like.
But technology is never. It's always techno-social in a way. So you always have interest. You always have attempts to translate to something readable, and it's always a, and things shift also because while before you would. See, like this adding would be part of how you would be on the internet. Now it's something which is delegated because.
And in a way, therefore, it's also controlled.
Of course, because this domain.
The whole thing is controlled. Yeah. But I mean, I'm really curious why you said that, right? Because I think it's a very interesting comment. Like, what would you see that you would say, oh, that's not human? Whereas for me, like
it's
this is
not
highly.
That's probably why I ask it because I send something, but I don't write with it. That's why I ask questions, basically.
But
if
I mean,
you
I think
answer,
did you expect it to be more, let's say, machinic? This kind of stuff. Like it's
the field is where it kind of interacts.
I can bring it as far as I can.
Yeah.
So you could call me a totally numb. I don't understand anything. I kind of fall into this category regarding computers and stuff. Mm-hmm. Don't ask me to do too much because I'm like, and at the same time, I understand or I can follow all this.
You understand this? Mm-hmm. Yes.
So then it becomes a matter of am I interested in knowing and knowing how to use it and of not understanding. Yeah?
Okay, that makes sense.
So do you now maybe have your answer?
Yeah. I think it's very interesting, like, cause in a sense, you're. I mean, that some people call it exactly like demystification of technology, right? Like, because there's this moment where you think it's very complicated, and maybe you think you need to bow because, like, you don't understand it completely. So you need to first express, like, I don't understand. You know, we're different species, and I apologize for what I'm saying. You know, like, because I don't obviously understand, but now I understood. and so, what happens to your apology, right? Like, and I think it's very interesting. It's a very interesting moment because I think technology has this way of creating a certain kind of respect, right? Because it's like so many layers of complexity being held together that one cannot wrap one's brain around it, and so there's a sense of respect that comes from that. But sometimes all you need is like this little key moment where you understand that at the end of it, it's just layers and layers of complexity. But if you break it down, it's small things that are just holding the whole thing together, and it is indeed about interest. Are you interested? Do you want to be engaged?
But also sometimes you are forced to be interested because, as you said, like you asked if it's also a mean of control, and of course, because in the moment you have these names, there's also control through the names. So for example, the main way censorship is done on the internet is you remove this link. So you ask where is the Pirate Bay or where is in Turkey Twitter, and you actually, you don't get sent to the server. So you cannot access anymore Twitter because it's blocked by, so immediately when you have these layers of translations, you have also the potentiality to control, basically, the usage of these networks.
And at the same time, I think part of what is happening is the recognition that we're in, like, a chain of delegations. Mm-hmm. You know, like, in the sense that we have all delegated something, some of that complexity to other parties that are taking care of things for us. And it's also that moment of recognition that this is a delegation I'm part of. Did I want to be not? Mm-hmm. You know, all of these questions can then be opened, even though that delegation is always there.
even though delegations sound more democratic sometimes than actually, or more.
And there's a last element that comes up in the reading of this language, because me and my computer, I'm emotional because I'm a human being and I deal with other things and stuff. But what I see there is basically, it could be what I can do when I'm not disturbed by anything else. So therefore it becomes, to me, scary, because it goes much faster than me and it can think much more in many directions at the same time, which I can't do.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the moment, I think, where you start to create distance between the two,
mm-hmm.
where in what I see is that it's absolutely not the case.
What you see here is that it's actually not that fast. Is that what you're saying?
Or yeah. And it's also not that. It's not very intelligent, basically.
That's correct.
Exactly.
So yeah, and it's really interesting to think like what it means to be now a network administrator, for example. It means that making sure that machines talk, that have this kind of intelligence, right? Like, so it gives you another perspective on the patience and the perseverance that you need.
With systems that are also like there are layers and layers and layers of different times. So it's like you have 25 years, actually much more, many more years of history, and it's not like like always an intelligent change that happens, but there's adding here and adding there. And
So it's really kind of like a Zen in practice, right? Like you just have to have a lot of love for it.
A bit of humor.
Oh yes.
Yeah, there's a lot of geek humor. Yeah.
I think it's a practice that we can do in a way. This opening up, it's just out of curiosity, but it is always somehow political. And in other situations, people have been forced to learn these things for example, this is the spray painted DNS number in Turkey. To be able to kind of not use the name server, which would not allow you to go to the net.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you're also pushed into learning these things in a through another urgency. But I think it's through curiosity that you can, basically establish this understanding that things are approachable, which is at the base of being able to open
them. Need them.
By the way, there's like so much going on
in China.
What does it say on the right?
I had to learn how to change that.
You
had to learn it to not be traceable by the Chinese authorities.
Mm-hmm.
They had to learn how to have this kind of machine that change your IP address.
Mm-hmm.
And, to mask their identity.
Mm-hmm.
They had to do it just to have Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had to learn.
And now, because you link the number, the IP number of Pierre's computer to his name, is this now there
forever?
Is this now coded somehow?
No,
can you track Pierre all the time?
Are
we there?
I can in the IP, right? In the IP, I can
here.
The IP, I can
here. In this room. And
but if now I do PM myself?
No, because if I would add this in the router, then you would also be able to, because we kind of inherit the
mm-hmm.
naming from the router.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise you would have to set it yourself.
Okay.
And it's in this file called /etc/hosts,
mm-hmm.
also in Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny that when you open this file, you will probably find the crack for the, you were saying, for the Photoshop and so on,
mm-hmm.
because that's also where you say that, for example, not to go to the Adobe server, but actually go to another.
It's located in the library, I suppose.
No, if you go to
open the terminal.
No space.
Space.
And some.
Yes.
You organize
space again.
There is a way to
etc/hosts.
Because it happens more
space
than slash.
Not
space. Space slash.
Slash.
Oh, yeah.
The
plural?
Yes.
Okay. With this command, you can open the...
Ah, it's not there. Hmm. You would have thought that he would have it there, no? He doesn't
where?
Have it, like, don't go to Adobe.
Ah, okay.
Post database.
No, it's just the standard stuff. Is there?
No.
Do you have it on your client?
You mean what?
Do you, you don't even have Adobe on there. What am I asking? I don't know. Whatever.
Would you see... What? For example, the also the 127.0.0.1, the localhost. So if you type into your browser localhost, it would go to the to your own computer. So that's like a so there's already like preset some things, some name.
Oh right, yeah.
So.
Sorry, it's,
So it's like we have our own like our own way of doing URLs, sort of, but we only do it locally. So only by sharing these files, we would be able to all ping.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we could just say like, okay, have my file, so we all have the same thing.
Okay. And actually, you see that.
How do I come back?
Good question. Let me help you.
I need an exclamation mark. Did that work?
No.
Can you give me a cue? Oh wait, so can you play? So the different...
Clavier?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Or maybe we go to the...
No. Can you write a cue and an exclamation mark?
To who is, I think, because this is more what network.
But
we
don't
want to...
Yeah,
I think it's nice to go... Where it is. So our next question is now... So we've seen the, we know that these computers are in this room. And we're also looking, we can also look at computers that are in the network. We might not see or not even consider computers. But now we're curious about where the server is.
Don't worry about what happened there.
Don't worry. VI is a text editor which has a very particular
Sorry. Tell
me hysterical. He was trying to remember Q exclamation mark like command, and I was like, Control C is
but,
your friend.
But you can also open it with the text edit, actually.
Yeah.
If you open text edit as a administrator, you can open then the file.
Yeah, but you don't know how to find
where it is.
Where
slash
it is.
Slash.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, you need to push
it. Yeah,
it's
to file
complicated.
You can't do text
like
edit.
This is why I'm like the whole thing.
You have to choose which layers to open.
Yeah, exactly. Not all layers. So we have the computers in the local network. We've seen where the border is through the router, is managed through the router, and we've been able to pass through the that border to ping the APAS server that is somewhere. So now we want to know where it is. So.
Where is APAS server?
About 100.
So, still, both these names, these domain names, and the IDs, they have kind of a database of who they belong to. So it's more like we won't really find the, like we don't really in general find the exact geographical location,
mm-hmm.
but you find the kind of bureaucratic geographical, the, like who owns,
mm-hmm.
like you can see when somebody owns a name or an IP, where they are registered.
Mm-hmm.
So which I think it gives more interesting information than geography maybe in a way. It's who owns this IP or this
mm-hmm.
name.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I did search the two letters IP without anything on Google just now, and of course IP is all the article in Wikipedia, but before
yeah.
Google show my IP address.
Exactly.
Public.
So what I
public
IP address. Because it's normally not this IP, but it's another IP.
It's another IP. It's my computer. It's the name of my computer.
No,
for the for internet. No.
Computer. If we look it up, we will all receive this IP.
Okay.
I'll do it.
What is it?
This is the. You want my IP address? 91 183 197 130.
I have the same.
You have the same. Okay.
If we all look it up, we would all have the same.
I would have the same.
Okay.
Because this is the address
of the border.
Okay.
And the border might have happened after.
But this also tells us someone else that is outside where we are.
Well,
that's called the public IP. So the 208 is your private IP inside the network, and we all have the same public IP.
So at home I have a number, and here I have a number. I have the number of the router to which I am connected. So by knowing the but how somebody know where I am?
Okay.
Because I send a message, and this message comes from somewhere, and if it's linked with a name, so they know where I am.
We know about
Of our public IP.
Yeah.
So the, again, a really basic network command is who is. And you can do who is and a domain name, or who is and an IP. So basically, if you do who is
91183197132.
Gives us back a really, really long
text.
Text, which again, lots of things are technical, but some are readable. So we see, okay, Belgacom, ISP.
That's correct, because it's you pay to Belgacom.
So that's the, and again,
if
we have an address, probably, Boulevard de Valbert, which is clearly where Belgacom is registered, not where this IP is geographically.
Exactly.
But still, that's more important to know, basically, who owns, who decides how to access this IP. Because Belgacom actually knows that it's this building, but it's internally organized. It's not on this public.
It is so-called anonymous.
Yeah, but for instance,
it is so-called anonymous. I mean,
with some warrants or so, the justice or police can have access, can ask.
Yeah, of course. That's why. But you have all other ways to obfuscate your IP, basically, to be on the network, on the internet with another IP. It's a whole, the whole privacy scene is working constantly on this. And,
Of course, because even I don't like this, you know?
You mean you have nothing to hide? You mean you have nothing to hide?
Totally transparent.
No, we are at a limit of awkward. But if you want to hide things, you know, I mean, it's quite soon, I think, this comes up.
All the time.
But then, in relation to the geography, I mean, does it mean that this is in? It should be in Belgium, or could it be in?
So in general, there is really some proximity,
Physically, also, because it means space, means workers, means I don't know. Means also there's a whole political issue. Because you said geographically.
The point is two different geographies. Because you can talk about the geography of the network.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if this IP was owned by, I don't know, Belgium is really big, but it's in Belgium, but you have kind of transnational networks that are so big that they really cross, they really span other continents, then you would see that you are in this network, but maybe it's registered in New York, because it has an office in New York, and it also has IPs in New York, but so it's still very geographical, but that's less readable where this cable runs through. I mean, you would see that like you have cables that run underwater and so on, and you would still be part of that network, but it's not really one-to-one with the geographic location. Mm-hmm. It's like a network location.
So let's look at where APAS is now.
Yeah, but it's very interesting because this is, so to say, what we found with the public IP is, of course, your registration with Belgium.com, I think, right?
Yeah.
Which is like our connection here, but the APAS.be is situated somewhere else.
Yeah,
right?
No, like, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
This is what you're asking.
Yes,
exactly. And so you will see it now.
And
so
if we do APAS.be, we receive the information.
Like this, who is APAS.be?
Yeah.
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 You like this?
Exactly. Only human.
So again.
It's right, I'm going to do that.
It's anonymous, and there's like some Gandhi thing going on.
Yeah, but it's many things. So, second off,
by submitting a query, you agree not to use the information made available.
That's great, no?
That's the first thing.
Well, that means there were some hired lawyers somewhere.
To make it buffered down. And so in this case, there is no information because it's a register called. These companies that they sell names. And sometimes they have this feature in which you can hide who is by default, which is quite nice, obviously, for the reasons. But the IP instead always need to have a more specific owner somehow.
Le texte est très intéressant.
Can we net?
Yeah, so this is
by submitting the legal
name registered.
Yeah.
So when you look for this, you'll only find out this French company. So this
Gandhi.
Is France.
Yeah, because there's a phone number there.
Yeah, there's a phone. You can call Gandhi.
Let's call.
And you have a support. You have a support address also. support@gandhi.net.
I'm wondering actually how, like, if they receive a lot of calls about like IPs.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm trying to reach somebody from APAS.
Yes. So with the like, and it shows the IP address as well in the Whois.
No, because Whois is really just asking who owns this name.
Yeah.
And
what is
when
that?
You do, well, NS lookup would be the.
Which is, like with the ping, you saw it, no?
Yeah, in the ping, it basically automatically translates into an IP, which.
So by doing the ping, you kind of translate back the domain name to its. Hardware.
Mm-hmm. And it's called Gandhi.net, no bullshit.
No bullshit?
Yeah.
Oh.
No bullshit since 1999.
That's why they hide your name. That's part of, I guess, not being bullshit. It's not to give out your details without
host.
A bit of effort.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's not like clearly, like, it's not hidden. If we can just easily find it, but it's just like not on the first call, it will give you
anything.
Address.
I think it's Stain who chose that host, I think,
Yeah.
At that time, it was the tech man.
But this is not the host.
No.
It's Hepsen.
Stain.
Because Joko knows, she takes it. So we look at who is. For the
so the APAS is a domain name and it's paid to one company, but it has nothing to do with the server actually.
Okay.
Because the domain name you can direct it to your computer or to nowhere.
So Gandhi.net is not our host.
No.
Well, they host
they hold
the connection
name.
Between APAS.
Name host.
Name host.
Yeah. Yes.
Say again.
So they host the name.
Yeah.
So they are the ones Joko pays to every year, like euros or something, to have the right to
use
to like if someone goes here to go to your machine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah.
My website.
Somebody
hold
our brand.
Is linked to
yeah.
a public interest
it.
Registry.
Yeah.
Is this something special?
But in general it's more like
in West Virginia or West Virginia?
Yes,
it's
amazing.
It's more the
That's my reading
about.
Yeah, that's more.
Yeah, we did that actually.
But so what we did with Pierre?
Yeah,
like
so basically you also
it's like usually
you have to look for the register.
It's just the domain names.
That's the information of IP because above is more information about the registry of all the domain names. Yes, it's really dense sometimes. But when you look for the resistance, that's more about
the name.
And again, you're also paying for basically
not having
the thing that I ask myself,
the company offers the service to not have your name.
Because basically I also have mine, but then when you say I stopped doing it,
not your thing, no.
Then you come in a gray zone.
I mean, it's like there was a design company Lust in the Netherlands, Lust.nl. So they started like I don't know, at the domain name in 99 or something. And then like they sold it for a lot of money because it was became popular.
But this is how certain people made money because they understood it and they bought domain names and they just waited.
But the domains are
gone.
So who did start the domain name of Appas and who did choose No Bullshit Gandhi?
It was
company.
A good choice.
I think the Gandhi is probably linked to Stan, as I remember. But
the one who did the first one.
Hertzner is then.
Where is the No Bullshit?
The host.
Guido.
We see now the host.
Right, okay.
And so, for example, it's like Moore.app chooses to instead have a direct link, and so you actually have the information when you do the And instead, when you look at the piece of the IP, it's nice, the familiarity sometimes. Because there's two reasons to be completely anonymous, but also to somehow stay the same in the way you are.
Okay, so now Appas. So instead of looking at this, we look at...
When you look at the IP, you see basically who is controlling the IP, not the domain name. So in this case, it's really the host, in a way. And again, it's a similarly organized answer, and this org name is usually the thing that gives most information. So it's Hetzner Online. In Germany, there's an address, and again, it's the address of the office. Mm-hmm. It's not the address necessarily of the data center.
In Germany, Hetzner saying not host.
It's German for from
If I search them on the internet, they have a public page.
Yeah, of course. I think
company.
Hetzner.de.
What is this abusement box?
.be.
So abuse basically is from that IP you receive attacks or like if there is some activity.
Okay.
Which you want to make a complaint about.
Yeah. Okay.
You have the abuse email is to say there is somebody using this IP, which is illegal.
Somehow their responsibility also.
For example, with your case, if there is, sometimes it happens that people, they have, let's say they have a website with a content management system and they don't keep it up to date. So there could be a possibility to break into that system and by that then also break into the server. That happens again and again. People make websites and they don't care about it anymore. And they're lurking there for years and suddenly somebody uses that as a background reference. And then what they get is information, something's happening from this or that machine, and then they have to check what's actually really going on first if this is true. Yeah? And if it's true, to block whatever's happening. That goes from blocking this website up to really physically shutting down the machine, depending on how wild the people are doing.
This abuse email.
Yeah, there are several, but in our case, because it's such a small team working, there's anyhow all the same people who get it. You have
spam and what, like different email addresses so that people can actually choose, and you already know by the send or the address that gets it to, in which area that could be. And then they have to take care of it. And that's what it's for.
So this APAS website is stored in something like this, like a data center in Germany.
Do you think it's in Germany? It's not because they are German that it's in Germany.
Of course. They could be using like
they
a cloud company in the UK,
yeah.
right? Like, so there's nothing,
yeah.
you don't actually know that. We
exactly.
just now know
the company that hosts it.
Mm-hmm.
So the company
right.
that hosts it is in Germany.
Right.
And we show a data center.
Yeah, it's nearby.
Nearby.
And there is another command which gives you more maybe information in a geographical sense. And again, not really of location, but what path you follow to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting that, again, it comes from this understanding of the internet, let's say, of basically being able to see where you hop through.
Mm-hmm.
It's called trace route.
Trace route.
And it basically tries to find all the IPs through which you pass to get to the APAS side. So you can see Belgacom, for example. These are the hubs, so basically the routers through which we pass through.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, I always find it crazy that it's still readable or still there, this information.
But you have to deal with that. You need to do it for a network analysis. You need
yes,
to have that information.
To optimize.
Exactly.
Which number did you trace through?
Yes.
Which number did you trace through?
Now it's APAS.
APAS. Okay.
So you can see
the number of the
From Hensner, it went to, for me, to a cloud host called your-cloud.host.
And so
I don't know where you got stuck somewhere or you stopped.
Maybe?
So core backbone is like how you got out of Belgium probably. And then that got you to.
So we're in a way we're following now, or is this now? Yeah, we're trying to.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
to see.
So it has different stations with Belgium.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily the source distance.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
We can make.
Just the fastest maybe.
Well, there is many different elements, and it really depends. The companies choose how to route.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, this should be readable from the outside. So you could choose which
number
to pass through and which network to pass through to reach a destination. It should be readable, basically, how it routes to choose the path. And, but yeah, it's obviously having right now a lot of stress of economical interest of where you pass has a lot of actual political and economical implications.
Mm-hmm.
But initially, it should be just
the
most efficient,
I mean,
the most
fast,
but there
is
other
there.
Elements.
That would feel
and then that's also the whole thing we can do in America with the net neutrality thing that the
exactly.
have to choose.
That's basically what they're
posting
or
what
they're questioning now is this
type
of.
Yeah, and also what type of information gets.
What
yeah.
the fuck?
So if you
say
that
same, send control or delete page.
Nice, yeah.
But it's not going to happen.
What?
Yeah.
But so
then
could you take? I couldn't do a who is on the your cloud.host because. Anyway, don't worry about it.
Just to say what we read here, I mean, when there is this asterisk,
mm-hmm.
it's because some node doesn't want to say
yes.
its name. Like, you can choose as a hop to
number
say...
Number five, yeah.
Mm. you can
so
ask to
And then again, you have this milliseconds information
yeah.
about how fast you hop through, because that's what is used for often this command.
No, I wanted to just to add that it's the first time of my life that I do that. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
It's exciting.
Like using terminal, to know wherever. But no, it's very interesting. But the two last windows always start with a like legal note. extremely explicit on the limit of the use and the publicness of this information. Mm-hmm. So the screen before was a long text. Now it's short text, but quite so. I know it's not the day maybe, but it's, these texts are quite interesting.
Yeah,
we don't talk about them, but this one is like DNS Belgium can take measures to limit the use of this of its services. Who is services? In order to protect the privacy, registrant not shown, please visit DNS Belgium. So I suppose that to visit DNS Belgium, I have to have a kind of clearance or something like that?
No. Like this quiz is really, I mean, it's really, like the readability of the network is a feature that is needed for it to work also more efficiently in a capitalistic sense.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it's more about if you want to make your own company in which you give information of all the
client transfer IPs. Prohibited. It's written.
Yeah, and that's where it's you want to pass the domain to somebody else.
Yeah.
I think.
Exactly.
If you want APAS to pass to somebody else, how this is regulated. Mm-hmm. So because people who use this command, it's often because you want to buy it, maybe. You want that name, or you want to.
And the other thing is also, I mean, if you look, for example, at Moody, you'll see that there are some rules that are different because it's based in Austria. So depending on where the company is, there's different legal. I mean, the main things are usually the same, but then there's different things that can happen in one country or different procedures, and that always has to go with local law. And therefore, you also have to know if this is the domain, where is it registered in the center? No matter what the machine is, but where is the legal company, like the legal seat of the company, or the
So, for example, the fact that the data is, let's assume that the data is in a data center in Germany, in South Germany, it means that the files fall under the terms of service with the company, but also under the German
data protection law. Yeah.
Bundesdatenschutzgesetz.
Data Protection Law.
TDP. Yeah. Teleservices Data Protection Act. Mm-hmm. Which, this is why certain websites are hosted, for example, in Sweden, and it's quite strict. Good protection. Mm-hmm. If you would be in the US, you would have other rules that apply. So there's, of course, only so much you can do. But certain countries are more protected than others. Mm-hmm. So this could be a reason to choose to join a person over anywhere else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or to choose a certain company. Like, for example, if you would host your data with Borat, you know you are with people that, when it comes to their terms and services, we'll pay attention to, let's say, not give away
your data.
Your data,
just like that.
Just
or to somebody, to anybody.
Just because someone has.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or to get it closer.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, I looked, I did a geolocation of the IP address that went together with the cloud that was on the trace route, and it gave me Berlin. As a location, and then for Hetzner, it gave me a latitude and longitude that I looked up, which is also in Berlin. But then I looked at Hetzner online, and it gave me an address in Folkland, where that is.
Oh, that's the one.
And there's a picture of like a huge
data
center, right? But why do I get?
But the geolocalization, it's still using this method basically. So it looks in a database of where an IP is registered and the address is the localization.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really, there is no really other ways from our perspective, obviously from security service perspective, there is probably other ways, but to kind of localize on a map something, it's always basically on who owns the right to decide where.
Not necessarily where the data is, like where your server is holding.
But
there must be a way, right?
One way, which is interesting, is basically when you do this trace route, you can see where you pass through.
Right.
And that says a lot. Because, for example, this was to go to moor.at. Mm-hmm. And so from Bergamo, Bergamo, then you can see this line, the last one, that says Amsterdam, Netherlands Internet Exchange. So you see that, for example, it's often not geographically the shortest, but from Belgium we go to Netherlands, mm-hmm. because probably from Netherlands there is a faster line.
Yeah, and I think that
Austria.
Because what I felt a little bit more than you, because I got this 16. Oh, you stopped it. Mm-hmm. Because then it goes from Amsterdam to Frankfurt, and then from Frankfurt to Vienna, and in Vienna there's the Austrian Exchange, and then from there it comes. So it was like, good. So the network geography has not so much has to do with politics and also time of when people or when countries really started investing in that technology, where the biggest lines are, and that defines how then the things are distributed.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of infrastructure, this all happens through cables or where?
Most of it's international, let's say longer distance is usually all cables, which is local.
Optical fiber.
Yeah, and if you look at the map, you know, there's like one that goes to India, and that was that goes to around South. And there was some they were putting something in the ocean, in the coast, and then they cut the cable. You know, it's gone.
Yeah. And still,
and we don't think
the
of
connection
it,
is gone.
The connection. We have to repair it.
How big is a cable?
It's physical still.
I don't know. It's physical. I mean, that's,
I
it is really
difficult
to see
in
Great Britain.
It's one cable with metal.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a hose with.
And I'm sure the one underwater are bigger than or different than the one
But that's the one that goes out of the ocean.
Basically independent
it'll
from
pretty.
Material support.
But if it's from what it is,
and
you know that they built another glass fiber connection maybe 8 years ago or 6 years ago to be some nanoseconds faster for e-trading?
Yeah.
And
for the what?
For e-trading.
Yeah.
And it was like when you hear the sum, I forgot the sum. When you hear what what it costs. You think like what? Then you hear that in once it's connected, they make enough money in 4 hours or something to have to get the revenue back.
Yeah, you have all this market here in Belgium.
Because of this,
because with the radio you can win some milliseconds over the cable, but for your own user. So it's this weird.
But the thing I think about is this, you know, it's the same with the oil. You know, it's a pump, and they can stop it and open it.
Yeah. Some extent, but it can also be rerouted around, so that's a little bit the immateriality there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so because of that structure, and it's not like a straight line, so that if you cut here, you might.
It's interesting that there is no reason to. I mean, you could probably have a direct, passing from Belgium to France to Austria, mm-hmm. but in this case, it does Belgium, Amsterdam, Frankfurt, Vienna, because of the deals mm-hmm. in between the companies. Yeah.
So I mean, and this is also a common thing whether you take a flight or whatever, or you buy something. I mean, it's the same logical.
Yeah, actually, it's similar. Why you have to stop in some city to go?
But I mean, it has this promise of like, I mean, the kind of internet utopians will say, you know, if you try to block something, we'll just route around it. But I mean, like during the beginning of the second Iraqi war, the U.S. just basically pulled down the whole network in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And then when the Snowden revelations came out, they could see that the higher level contracts between the different networks is done through something called BGP. It's a protocol again, but it's like a higher level protocol. Mm-hmm. They would hijack so that all the traffic from local connections would first go to the US and then go back so that they could get all the traffic.
So we have
And the thing is, of course, like, again, going back to maintenance, sometimes administrators will make a mistake and you can have that kind of weird route, right? Mm. Like, and that was the case of Pakistan, when they wanted to censor YouTube, they messed the BGP cables, so all of a sudden all of YouTube was down for the whole world because it all went to a kitchen sink in Pakistan, basically.
So there's that element, but there's also a lot of manipulation for whatever reason, including intelligence.
And what is then the kind of buffer, because around the not the Snowden, but the other guy, the
Assange.
Then there was this whole bunker kind of thingy. I don't know, it was Iceland, I think.
Well, Iceland, they got, with the new government, really good data protection laws, so actually many hostings moved there because of this. So, it's always this, you know, state and infrastructural interactions. And yeah, like, as you think, like, this protocol, like, it's still, in theory, everybody can join this network. It's the promise of this very... American free market view in a way, but everybody is able to join as long as you have the material possibility to do. Because, for example, not everybody can put a cable under the ocean. So in the end, as far as everything should be in a way redirectable and flowing, there is clearly some narrow paths which are also where control happens.
And I mean, larger corporations by now are laying their own cables, so there's like, there's no longer just a public internet, but like Microsoft will lay its own cables.
Google,
and Google will, and Netflix, and because they have
public internet.
Whatever, but like, if you could imagine if it was a common infrastructure, that commonness is being dissolved as we speak.
That reinforce our feeling that the companies are replacing nation states. That because if internet stop, basically, it's they will have their own way to continue to.
I mean, I think we've been thinking like of analogies of colonization, and I'm not a historian at all, so I will butcher what I'm about to say. But if I understand correctly, for example, the East Indian
trade company,
Like these companies are like helping. The globalization starts with these companies. Colonization first starts with these globalization of companies, and at some point they need the states because things start getting complicated, right? Like they have to deal with local issues or whatever. Like Dutch workers have kids with brown and black people. Oh no! Like how are we going to deal with this? So you need like the state to come in and regulate like economics, relations, and biology. So I think that there's always a certain, I mean, right now, if you look at what's happening in the technology area, there's a huge like interaction between states and global networks, right? And so I think we're seeing exactly that moment where the states became the key holders of colonization. We're seeing exactly the same, and if you consider the internet and the globalization that came with it as a kind of new version of global colonization, the states are now being pulled in to play that role.
And,
right?
And you can also see that it's a continuity, that there is no real break, because these cables which are under the water are really the natural continuation of the telegraph lines, which were started by British Telecom and Bell, which now are again like Vodafone and AT&T, so you have a continuity of the company who owns it, the path where they pass, and also the state company economy switch.
But I'm sure, I mean, well, this is also, I don't know if it's relevant for this morning, but the... there is for sure some protections made by the
military.
Have fun,
the military apparatus for sure takes care about independence, autonomy of the, I mean, French military power will not let Google try to challenge their independence.
Well, it's a complex interaction. I mean, there is a continuous shift of governmentality through the different through the different parties involved. But I think now it's clear that the upper hand is with the tech companies, basically. Or that's the way that things are being reshaped under the effect of big tech companies, basically. And that's why they want control over all, that's why they want their own infrastructure.
Yeah.
While before this was kind of left out, now owning the infrastructure becomes somehow important.
So the military can push the government to remain majoritaire in some companies that still the state has control on the infrastructure. And
that's a European
or
because in the US they never really have. So
I feel like
in Europe is never less view of national telecoms basically. But still, they've also been privatized and they work as companies. So I think the state control of the infrastructure is really
minimal right now.
Disappeared.
Yeah, but if the, for instance, the state have a large part of this privatized company, then they still have certain control.
That's a French perspective.
I think there's a lot of push to. Governments are trying to keep to 51%, but I mean, I think the number. I mean, I think, for example, when the situation happened in Greece, right, like the economy collapsed, and all of those 51% just gone, right? So, and it really puts the countries in a huge dependence relationship on these global investors. And in the case of, I mean, the top five companies right now, in terms of valuation, are the tech companies.
Yes.
So they're really like sucking money massively.
Apple, Facebook, Amazon,
Facebook, Microsoft,
and Google.
Yeah, GAFAM is one of them.
Yeah.
And then you can remember GAFAM.
GAFAM.
I mean, there are different ones. I mean, I think there are different acronyms you can play around with them, but there are the five.
So,
It's weird. Coming close to lunch, we can. Shall we? I mean, to put the file, I think it's. Can we like? Would you have like 20 minutes more?
Yeah.
And then we go for lunch.
Maybe we need like.
Well, we do like a. Because it's just to act upon this.
But we can do a short break now, then
Bodies, which somebody marks, and you show a bodies,
Like the small web server, maybe not to the Raspberry Pi, to the small server, and then the FTP.
Or we go straight to the Atlas. I think that's it.
Hmm. Maybe just to show that all computers are servers. Also.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. But maybe that you just demonstrate, show how this works.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the Atlas we do. Everyone does it.
Yeah.
Because I think like it needs to really find to
yeah, yeah.
Also because I also want to read yes. Eat first.
Ah, the network.
Yes. A network and a password.
Um,
Research center. Okay.
Do you know this research center for proxy politics?
No.
It's Berlin, and they work on a lot of these issues. Mm-hmm. Not the server, but the level.
Where does it come from?
It's a group in Berlin. It's quite like well-known people. Like Hito Steyerl is there. Even Tom McCarthy gave like a lecture on something.
How's it called? Research Center for Proxy.
RCPP. Yes, I guess.
It's like,
And the other thing is maybe to because I think one thing to try to understand what this takes, maybe then we can discuss over lunch, is the cloud serving, the difference. Well, maybe we can do that after then. After we put something in.
We had like, of course, double the amount of layers.
So basically, there is no fundamental difference between this computer and this computer. Like, the way they participate in the network, the way software works on it, it's really the same. It's more like there, clearly, you have a reasons of efficiency, consumption, and economics to justify why they're in the shape, why they're there, and how they're accessed. But basically, every computer on a network can be a server, so all and are in some ways. It's just maybe it's not offered as a service to other people. But for example,
because a server serves you.
Well, a server serves a service. service.
Okay.
But for example, like there is this command that I think works also on OSX, which basically makes your computer be a server for the files in a folder. So that I'm now in this APAS folder. I mean, you have to change that actually is CD in the terminal, but maybe I'll just go quickly just to show that basically when I run this command, it says that it opens a server on port 8000. So if you go now to my IP, at port 8000, it opens in the browser the content of the folder. So, and it's really...
Are you following it on the notes?
So when we access a website on the internet, when we go to APAS, we get directed to this computer in Germany. And then there is something which is basically an interface which is awaiting for this kind of request. What is at that page? So our browser makes a request of what is there using this HTTP protocol.
So now we have been visiting the server with other softwares.
With the ping.
With the ping. Have a but if you open a browser, like Firefox or whatever, and you ask it to go. You can also visit the server, and it knows what to do with what is being served from that thing. And so what Martino is doing now is...
So basically this says, go to apas.d and use this HTTP as a way to interact.
Okay.
And the server sends back these things. Okay.
So instead of the ping, we use the browser now as a software to interface with what's there.
And in this
what
case,
is the command for that?
It's the, is it in the notes?
I have put the HTTP.
It's basically saying, okay, to act as an HTTP server, so basically to respond when there is a call on that port, which is there. And
so just to sorry to so to so what happens when you type apas.be into your browser, something will happen on this machine that will know, ah, I need to serve this web page. If you would type Martino's IP address into your into a browser normally,
it would not ask.
It would not know respond. How to respond because not the same software is running on his computer. Okay. He has to run some software that makes his computer a server. And this is what he does with Python.m simple HTTPS server 8000, which is to use the programming language Python, which is more usually installed on your computer, with I don't know what this one does, then runs this script, simple HTTPS server. It's like a tiny version of the server, and run it over a certain port, 8000. So just to
normally, when you do apas.be, there is also a port, and it's port 8080, which is the standard port for the browser to look for. So it's hidden to you, but
so it's
you
like
always
the exit
ask
door
a specific
from the computer.
So normally, this port would be closed on my computer because we don't act as servers. But in the moment we run this software, then we become one.
Okay. That's the.
And so, yeah, I mean, if I run it as port 8, but so, yeah, in this case, it's I'm serving this page which contains the files of the folder.
So, you can see if you would in your browser now go
run
to
this command, the Python.
First you can look for you, no?
You mean you?
Yeah. We can visit Martino's this folder on Martino's computer from where he's running the server. So we type in his IP address, which is
188, I think.
We recognize the IP address, like 192.168.254, but then he's 182. And so this is the same we've been looking at with the keys, but we just type the colon 8000. Which is, it's this computer seen through
you have
this
it on the
report.
Local server pad.
Yes.
Yeah. You can click.
I'm not doing it.
You're
looking. Yeah.
But
you
are a bit accelerating. But
if it's okay, then I follow.
But or with Pierre, basically I'm offering. It's not outside. Okay. in the public internet, but internally I'm doing a server with
this
page.
Yeah, I'm serving
you shift or change your computer, now it's you use it as a server.
Yeah,
it's serving.
Yeah, which obviously doesn't stop me to also look for other servers or.
So,
somebody else is.
Me.
So you're looking, but
I'm looking, yeah.
And Seda is also serving now.
Hello.
Hello. Moment. You serve, you become host. So,
right.
This is a way.
That work.
What happened? You need to remove my name.
Yeah.
You need to put it up. You need to put it up here.
It's not.
So you're kind of mirroring our local network, right? You're mirroring the thing.
You mean the website or?
No, I mean the use of your.
Yeah.
You're doing the same.
I
took a folder. Whatever folder is in, and then when I
was
going to
just request, it says send some.
But
it sends five.
We're making a small data center.
Yeah. Now we have two computers in the acting as in the rack. And it's really actually like this. It's a bit more complex.
Why would you do this?
Let's say if you had a
because the computers consume a lot of electricity, so you want to make specific computers to do that function. want to put them in a place where they can be cooled down, where you have a fast network, where you have
but they're also always on. Because if I need you,
and then you
stay always on,
you
all the time.
Choose the
network.
To protect your hard drives, infrastructure around to ensure the continuity.
When I press tab, it completes it for me.
And but for example, there is people that have their server at home
inside, and then I choose
the Netherlands have this homebrew server club, they call it. So basically, they have a website online, because this website now is at the house of somebody, and it just can
do
the same thing with the domain.
And we try to do it.
Yeah.
Sorry,
we have to talk to them.
Yeah. In one line.
Yeah.
And we went into broadcast mode in the wrong way.
Not as good as.
But are you serving now?
Yeah.
No, not yet. Not yet. I was taught how to choose the file that I could serve.
The directory.
But we didn't go until the point. Yeah.
Yeah, because if you run it just when you open the terminal, it would offer all your home folder.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is.
Yeah.
You don't want
to serve everything.
Not today. what I find interesting is that it's a very good way to
share
work together.
Exactly.
And to share files.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
Without having to pass through.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I could, for instance, my website.
Bluetooth.
I set my computer as a server for my own website, and every time I just open my computer, my website is online. If I close it,
yeah. Yes.
And this happens through this Python.
It can happen in many different ways. Yeah. This Python is just the most simple, quick, and it's already in our computers. So, but to do more complex things, you need more complex server software.
Okay.
And if I click on the file that you served to us, to this community, then it's immediately going to. I was, of course, clicking on Flock of Google, and I go there, and it downloaded it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I opened it, and so it downloaded it on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
But that has a continuation of
And I have a PDF now.
You could link a lot of computers, so it kind of starts to look like the real server thing.
Yeah.
And
I mean, you would want to then organize how you go from one to the other, or how maybe when I'm asleep, say that computer would take over, or you start to organize
it. It constantly looks for the files where they are
built.
Do you do this at Constant?
Hmm? No, at Constant we have set it like this.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we have two setups. We have a setup in. We used to have a setup in a server in Belgium with an organization more or less similar to Murat, but had many problems with them because they are a bit older in there and a bit less vibrant than Ring, so they didn't take care very well of their machinery. So now, with Constant, we use those servers a lot, so we were depending on them. And so we sadly had to decide to go to a commercial data center in France. So we're still trying to get back to Belgium. But because of the volume and the performance we needed, we couldn't deal with the, sloppy maintenance of the. Because the people that were taking care of this just went crazy and they really did not want to stay there. So it's a reasonably good place, like with good contract and good. France is. Let's not really discuss this now. But it's a. And so small parts are still in Belgium, but the most, like for example, the pans we're using, they're really demanding, are on the French commercial server.
So it's like you would just have a hard drive basically connected to the.
How much traffic.
You also have to understand, like this, like Murat has their servers in an apartment because they want to have them close. I mean, this part of their politics. If you like, they have lined the apartment with two layers of mattresses. Yeah. If you go in, it's you go dead. It's like such a noise.
Wow.
The smell of machines that turn 24 hours. The you know the ventilation, the cooling, the I mean all this kind of stuff is just it's not very pleasant. So you, I mean for your own education and wanting to wanting to play with something, it's nice to.
But
have
it shows but it shows also the shift that there is more and more somehow a necessity for more power and more like. There's an increased need for certain functions in the way we use the internet that was not there before. So before, to have a server in your house was really, in a way, doable and scalable, and the amount of traffic was this. But now that everything is always video streaming and so on, it means that you need this kind of centralization and other type of economies to run. So you really need a good, like a reason, like activism, basically, to do things differently.
Yeah.
Or the reason to get close to the machine again, and that's why people want to put these home servers to try to re-understand why we ended up instead with centralized huge warehouse computers.
Clinton's email server was only doing emails, and not her YouTube. She said the emails were in the basement.
Yeah. I mean, you can for example have certain parts in your own. In your own building and other parts outside. That sometimes people that have sensitive material can decide to feel more safe with.
And then just to kind of understand the scale, so then for example, how come organizations like yours and several others, and for example, APAS with the whole, let's say, difficulty of the website, to put it like this, how come they don't gather?
So this is what's happening right now. Like if you see, for example, Framasoft, or there's now a move in Belgium as well. So the people that maintain constant servers are concerned about this. So they're doing two moves. One is they're working on a centralized set of services so that people have like cloud services, these pads, like what you see with Microsoft as well. Like you can use these services without having to run them.
Mm-hmm.
On the one hand, and the other is to try to think about how to have the space in the data center. At this moment, for an organization like Monsanto and Domaine Public, for example, that is serving our it's not an option. This setup is the size we're looking at. So they would have like the Domaine Public has like I think they had like one rack like this, which is
quite a thing.
Like in electricity, in bandwidth, in noise, you have to have a controlled environment. So to have this up all the time is not like a pleasant thing to have at home. So they choose to go in a data center, so they need to find a way to literally rent. So you rent
a rack.
And then Constant, for example, rents a place in the rack to place our own machine. So we have our own machines, dedicated machines, but in a rented space. So we're like in an apartment building.
Yeah, pretty much like it.
Yeah.
But
and so it looks like APAS has, for example, has a, that's why I draw it like this, has a virtual room on one of the machines.
Exactly.
So APAS
machines
has
ten different sizes.
But for example, I've been keeping thinking about this. I have a friend who came to have a not this size of rack, but quite a rack at home. And this is a couple. She's a movie editor, and he works for Cisco, but already like for I don't know, yeah. 35 years or something. Mm. They have numbers at Cisco, and I think he's in the tens or something.
Yeah.
So he works from home, basically. And he built his own computer, and they have this whole... And they, when you enter, they have this. They have this. I mean, and I've known him for 20 years, and I've always had something like this at home. Kind of thing. I mean, it's not so big, but it still is a kind of sort of wall.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's doable.
Yeah.
It's a commitment.
It's a commitment.
Totally.
It's a commitment.
It's like the cats, the same kind of like commitments.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it needs
taking care of, and not
really. Yeah.
But then I'm like, if you're different organizations together, you kind of become this group of people.
Yeah.
And then you kind of talk about a rack like this,
Yeah, but it's like the problem with the storage rooms for I don't know, dance or theater companies. When you have to storage your decor, sometimes you I don't know, you go into you a lot, or sometimes not, so the decor stayed there for 6 months without being used, etc. Or the production houses with companies. So to have it at home, finally, if you do your counting, it's better to have a room in a building where somebody is paid to take care about that there is no moisture.
I mean, of course, room is
but it's good. Like, so in Brussels, there is domain public. So that's like as close as you get to Murat, with the difference that they don't own that infrastructure. So Murat has this physical infrastructure, and one of the reasons why they can do this is because in the time they started, the Austrian government gave, let's say, backbone infrastructure to organizations, like civic organizations, to experiment with, and they held on to this this cable connection. So they have high bandwidth to a apartment. It's like really like you open a door and then suddenly you're and so from there they can actually do this. In Brussels, as far as we know, this is not the case. So the backbone connections go to data centers, commercial data centers. So what Domaine Public does is they then rent with
universities.
Yes, that's the other opportunity, or the possibility. So, and universities sometimes, and this is also what Irene says, used to be then providers for cultural infrastructure or artists or radical organizations or whatever, and that has more and more become, that's not an option anymore. So, Graz is the presence of something like Murat is quite special. There's not a lot of these independent organizations. Because of the maintenance issue. Like, they fight constantly to keep interest, to keep their interest and their excitement about something they completely believe in, but at the same time means, with always the same three people, and night go back because there's a mission.
It's a bit the gate and the venue they have.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah, and then there's they make the excitement by, okay, you're part of the bar team, we're having fun because we run an evening, etc. Here, it is really quite dull.
Make the machines talk with each other.
Machine. So it takes a very special interest perseverance to want to do that. So there's a double thing in Austria that makes this possible. It's one, this connection to the high bandwidth. And two, a group of people that has stuck together and wants to take care of it. So in Brussels, we have an organization that, from the same time, providing the services, so after the physical infrastructure, doing giving a host, arranging the hosting, installing the software, maintaining the machines. But they don't have their own physical infrastructure. And they struggle because they themselves had to move out of this Zaventem data center as well. So they did the same. And I'm now looking for.
It's kind of the new style concierge. So, you know, before you always had this person living in the building, and it's a 24-hour, 7-on-7, every year in and out kind of principle of taking care. And it's kind of like, this is what you kind of need. It's this principle of someone or
yeah, but and again, because of how the patterns of usage of the internet changed, you cannot, like, to start a new project like this is such a, like, the legacy of having this networking graph, for example, makes it still viable, or otherwise, the reason why things are done is like when you have activist servers.
And they also have the chance to start early on,
All these projects exist if they started early on, because they start anew. There is all these infrastructural choices that
So then there's more like a homebrew server club, which is a group of people that's interested in understanding this, and so they don't pretend they serve.
They don't offer services.
They don't offer services.
They serve themselves.
Yeah. So they do this in a hyper scale to try to learn together, to talk about the other thing. And so this is another style. But yeah, then you cannot run a streaming video from it.
Yeah, to change, like, you need this a change also in understanding what you do, and that the seamless things that we use daily, they're not the easiest and they're actually the most difficult to maintain. While you need, if you change the pattern of use, then you can also think of other ways to host and to maintain. So
but then how come a small organization like Murat takes three people constantly, like, who then does the whole internet? I mean, like, the big,
what do you mean, like,
is there like a whole army of people constantly maintaining all the servers, or
no, but
if Murat already has such a, such a thing to kind of do it for such a small organization, then who maintains all the big services?
You mean like,
or?
I mean, it's business companies, so they have, well,
I mean, this is the,
it works towards centralization in warehouses. It's like, it's like the scale just went up a lot, because it becomes much easier to be one company that owns a lot of space in an efficient way and rents it out. So that's, I mean, the movement to the cloud is this, basically, that you have some companies which are much more efficient at centralizing and doing this and sell and renting, basically. But this comes with a lot of dependency.
But then there's like 100 people maintaining all
this data. So this is like, this is one of the data centers that Google owns in Belgium. And it's, this is run by 100 people. So 100 people constantly
24/7.
Yeah. And that goes from cleaning to replacing hardware to caring for the software to
make sure that the computer is
Well, a lot of things are automated, right? Like, I mean, the thing about the industry with data centers, actually, and so this is like where the idea that this computer and that computer is the same doesn't hold anymore, because they have started developing specialized hardware to be able to serve these kind of things, these kind of data centers, and like the drive is to automate massively, and there's like a very strong mantra that like human error is the only kind of problem there, and so like the ethos now is that you use as little human as possible. Make sure that the machines just run in an automated fashion. So, and this has like the effect that, like, when in Amazon, when a human made an error, that there's like amazing dependency. So, like, almost all of Silicon Valley in California was down for a few hours, I think. I don't know, which you can imagine, like, has a huge economic impact. And then, you can imagine that what we saw today, where we by hand put something into the hosts, right? Like that gets automated, and whatever is that automation is gets automated. So there's like meta levels of automation. And so if you make a mistake, it cascades down and has like amazing ripping apart of the thing, and then you pull it together again. But so the ideal is to minimize the people. Right?
But still, there is a big difference actually between the Google data center and, for example, Hetzner. That is where Appas is. Because Google data center, they call it like the model of the server is called warehouse sized computing. So they think these places as like one huge computer. So yeah, they have specialized hardware, and basically also they do not offer hosting space. Like Google only offers their services, so their emails, YouTube, etc. Mm-hmm. So you don't actually connect to a server in the same way. Mm-hmm. There you interface with the whole Google infrastructure, which has its internal flows in between the different data centers. While instead in Hetzner, you kind of obtain an IP, you obtain a server, and you have a kind of direct relation to a specific machine, whether it's a server or a virtual machine in the server. So that's the shift in, they become much more efficient, obviously, because they have control at all levels of the infrastructure. But it also changes from offering hosting to basically offering a whole set of interconnected things, which are, in a way, black box. So
maybe, because we can, we need to put one file on the Apple server, just to...
On the Apple server? Okay. Just to do it with now or after?
I don't know, if we can go... It's one now, we can do it...
10 past now.
We have nothing. How to put a...
Let's just, like, we quickly explain it, so you have seen it, and then...
And then the DB, we open it up.
Yeah, okay. So we just go through it,
yes.
The motion, and then we can, if you're really interested to do it yourself, we can explain,
yes.
Or whatever. So just demonstration, and do it in class, Zila, then?
Yeah.
So this is important.
Yeah.
One part is my login file SFTP, so it's my login, but it's all right, you can use it. So this is the way to talk to the Apple server. Mm-hmm. It's only the part that is the research center. So you cannot touch the main domain.
So basically, in the same way that before we saw that you have port 80 to communicate to get things in the browser.
Yeah.
In this case, you have this other port which can be used to transfer files.
7527.
Yeah, which changes. I mean, it can be the standard would be 21, but in this case, it's a specific. So you have this, you have many different, you have many different browsers, you have many different FTP clients, which is called the software that connects to an FTP server. FTP is file transfer protocol, so it's the way with which, one of the ways with which you can upload files in a server. So you can download it, this software is for all the platforms. And it looks like this, basically. It's nice because it shows on the left your computer, like this, my folder, and so on.
Can you show the Apple's folder you were just serving?
Yes. It's,
can you go larger?
Yeah. I know I'm doing this multiple. And that is the folder. And so on top you can put in the information which is here, so it's upper.bin, username Fanta, password 17,000.
I'll explain
the program, how to get to that.
So the top line is where you set put in the information. So
yes,
the host the user
This
I understand. But we will see it after.
Yeah, we'll see it after. I will tell you.
We'll include it after lunch.
But I come close because I'm...
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, it says something. So it needs to be written more properly, like it has another, but it's similar, you have always the host, the port, username, password. So,
The username, I'm coming.
So you see up, it's giving you the...
So it says something like information about the security and like the communication between you and the server is encrypted. That's basically what it's. So you see, it opens it in the same way in this division, and when you see this, it's like the root, like in OS X or Linux, is the main. Then you have a folder home, and in the folder family, it has the Research Center folder, which contains, like, is exactly the same folder as when you open. Where is my browser? Oh, oops. When you open in the browser Research Center, it basically, like, the server serves the same folder, and it shows this.
Yes.
It shows this because there is a file called index.html, which is the file which by default gets looked at when you open a web page.
Yeah.
And the file index.html contains. Yeah, contains this research center.
Research
center. There's only one.
So make a change.
So, yeah, if we add it. Well, and say,
So changing the file on the server.
Yeah.
So you save like in. And when you save the file,
that's your view page source. If you have to change it.
How do I?
When you change this file.
So in the you can.
I don't know what it does if you if you. I have two
blood
clicks, so that's the one. So you can do
edits. Well, I have second line now.
So wait, if you go.
Parce que ce qu'on voit, c'est que je le déplace et on va voir qu'il y a des crises. Ça, c'est ce qu'on voit de l'extérieur et ça, c'est le code.
And you do whatever you want with it and then you upload again.
Yeah, I can make download it.
Yeah. So just download it? Make changes?
No. I missed the first.
I mean, right now, it's just like this. Anyone can now.
That project is so far.
Can now make changes to this. Folder, there's
not
.org? No, it's dash
art. Ah, okay.
Yeah, so I think there is also for OS X on the client in this case.
Yes.
So. And everything you do on the website?
No need of wrong, I think.
What?
Is linked to the group. What did you with the research center kind of add?
It's what I can do this from my command line. I never
so
use the FTP, but
you don't will be able to the log files will be able to see that the link is editing.
Yeah.
I use Bitnotes, of course.
I don't know, whatever.
Because my, like, I'm logging now in for many
years. Oh, that way.
And in step,
I don't have a.
But you have to do mine speed.
Can't stop me. But you didn't think that the Akas machine to another machine.
Ah, okay, I didn't know how to do it. Sorry, okay. Mine speed and then space or not?
Yeah. Alzheimer knows how to do it. To transfer files between our machines
Minus
and
for SSH.
Remote machine.
Ah, so it's not for SFTP.
That basically are similar setups. It's just that
the
remote machine
can
be talked to.
Command line,
and
you don't really make it difficult because you need to do direct releasing, but it doesn't put you in another platform. So
it's
like 5G,
they wanted to install VLAN. I said no.
So in this case, you're
yes.
Neither.
With the package came in a special online. I said no.
No, I can't do an SSH.
Voilà, so
no.
All right.
This works.
Let me see. Maybe I can see. But it's minus T with a capital. How about that?
Okay. This is it.
Yeah, so if you have.
No, they won't take it. Oh, wait.
If I zoom in here.
Yeah.
So we have.
Yeah.
Atlas.
this is it.
You want me to write something?
Yeah. So
and
this is it. So the host is this.
Software that can communicate.
We can make operations on the machine. It doesn't work. And then these files can be seen by anyone that wants to have this. So no one is looking there because research center has not been published.
Yeah.
And research center slash hello has also not been published. So,
so but if you have saved new version of Web
to build. Yeah, it just overruns it. Just
yeah, it says have to. Because it's a specific version of FTP, so you have to use this button.
And then you
just
put in the hello form.
And write in the same thing.
So it will ask you, like, hey. Mm-hmm. Oh, you put it in the hello
form.
No, that's all right. So now, if you, like, index of HTML is the standard, like, is the default file that will be read when someone goes to the hello. So if you go to.
I'm trying. It doesn't have any of the basic.
Yeah, it's different. I don't remember.
Where am I?
CWD says the current.
Just like if you go there, you see the index that's on the default. If you go slash hello, you'll go to the index file. So, and if you call, like any file you call index.html, will be served when you go.
SFTP, of course, does not work in
so now. When you open the folder,
And then
you need to go to researchcenter.apos.be/index. It will not automatically.
So the 7 keys and
not expect.
Yeah, always
trust.
Always trust this host.
Okay. So it's like
with
a special behavior for files.
Yeah, and the research center.
So you can write things, I can write things. We have, we can be more than you people. So let's do something. Okay, where do I write? How do I write?
Yeah, it's a
The index is the folder.
So you can
this
you can edit the index or make any file or in the
folder. Again, this is like simple.
In the folder hello or in the folder.
Or you can make any folder also.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just that the where you put all the images.
Yeah, while it's a big
on another page you
prefer when we use this file. So it's a way to what is in a folder.
Or you can say
well in this case if you don't know the name of the folder it doesn't show.
So each session you have the
and how to write something.
Well, you can write in the index.
So this is the page, so I double click on it.
The HTML would be your source file.
And then
it's literally like an index, like it will give
double click, it just downloads the places.
View edit.
And so if you think about apps, what apps would be, so we can look at apps.
Right? No. No. This is view.
You go back to the, to the so if you go into W, yeah, up, up. No, in HTML. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So wait, because then you can choose it.
So www, go inside.
So I think, because you have the settings of how it opens certain files. So.
Yeah. Okay. So here, we have no.
Yeah.
Ask.
No. Exam, you always edit.
No, I mean, not record. It's just clear or having operating. Or not. So here we see, so for example, folder books, I don't know what it is, that has different things. I think it's. Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And so now you're going to stay in theory in
WordPress. I mean, WordPress. So here.
Override, duplicate, override.
That is uploaded or.
Okay.
Added.
So what you do is going
to
be.
To the WordPress?
No,
this
you can erase
is
it.
The WordPress is.
Anyway,
well, so how do I do. I don't do anything.
I save. Application that generates the pages.
When you go back to the software, it should tell you
that
it wants to
upload.
This is it. It has been changed because you saved.
Back to the server, yes. Okay, so now we're going to refresh the page.
Yes.
I have it somewhere.
Yeah.
No,
but
that's
so
the code.
Yeah,
so yeah. But I changed all the fonts.
What?
What happened?
Because
I changed the font
in Mac. Oops, it puts the font, and then it changed the font.
Ah, yes.
Save the file on the text.
So I have on the text edit. I have to change the font.
Look at
then
the code. It's going to be much more complex now. So before it was this nice, and now
yeah.
That's the format.
It's a nice follow-up of last time.
So this is simple.
So how can I change everything again?
The character? Yeah.
How do I change this?
So this is the file that's there.
So this is
the
I'm going to close some windows.
What is
right?
This? I don't know.
It's just
put a link to the somebody put a link.
Browser.
It's like there's
Office. This line was mentioned.
Ah, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like there's a lecture and you get this just a program.
Is that
what
it took away?
It's quite new, no?
I know, I've never seen it. I'm a bit shocked. But so it means it's a bit difficult to sense where things are.
No, but I mean, also in the Facebook.
This is a video. Okay. This looks
like just
a lecture.
You don't know where you are. This is in general a bit of a video.
You would think that this would be a video, but there's no, nothing comes out like this.
So anyway, if you want to try,
it's ridiculous. So
and
all
you
of
can
this.
Just hear when.
So this is for.
I don't know what's
it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, James Brittle. I know that for sure.
But of course, then you don't need your. You don't use your.
No,
we
don't.
So
I did something. Voilà. I used the Flanker's font. So now I save.
Everything I kind of imagine I want.
And now
if I look
there, I say yes.
So that's the structure.
Now we have more la compliance. And I wrote something and changed the font to your font. Yeah. That I downloaded.
Yeah, good.
Yes. Like we're gonna collapse.
nice the connection with the format thing.
Yeah.
Because when it's open in text edit, it's yeah, really same. Get more like the fonts so and more information just by saving it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, regarde, okay. Regarde maintenant le code. Oh, avant, il n'y avait rien, maintenant, bah oui, parce que ça c'est. Okay. Bah c'est parce que c'est Apple. Hein. Ouais, ouais. Bon, mais il avait choisi ça. Hello the world. Okay, so I'm going to.
The name of the class is also nice.
Couldn't you feel repos that you have
to convert it to
a beach
from this month? Okay, fine. Very funny. Very funny.
Cocoa?
Yeah.
Cocoa? What is it? It's a cocoa.
It's
like
a.
It's a. And a thermos cup.
I think it's.
Yeah.
It's a tight diagram environment.